Welcome to the podcast. I'm Angela Beaubier, and this is Life in the Talbot Settlement, brought to you by Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. In this series, we will do our best to give you a full appreciation of the history of Western Elgin County in southwestern Ontario, from First Nations to the early settlers to the 1950s. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge funding from Tyrconnell Heritage Society, operators of Bacchus Page House Museum. Welcome to episode 42 of our podcast series, Life in the Talbot Settlement. Rules, rules, rules. Until the 1960s and 1970s, most people's lives followed stricter social rules of etiquette than we have today. Rules of who you can socialize with, what job or career you can have, and often even what food you can eat. Many of the rules, or in some cases laws, were written down, but many of them were informal or traditional. The informal, traditional rules we learned from our family. We were also taught them in school. One of the first rules which must be followed was that of the introduction. In the 1850s, even the Bacchus family was respectful of social rank, and how to introduce one person to another was dictated by a set of rules. Many of us in the 21st century, who are of a certain age, were taught in primary school the correct way to introduce our friends to our parents, even though formal social rank was not a consideration for most people in the mid-20th century. As with most of the rules of the mid to late Victorian era, there were books which include rules about introductions. To quote from Rutledge's Manual of Etiquette, written in 1879, "To introduce persons who are mutually unknown is to undertake a serious responsibility, and to certify to each the respectability of the other. Always introduce the gentleman to the lady, never the lady to the gentleman. The chivalry of etiquette assumes that the lady is invariably the superior in right of her sex, and that the gentleman is honored in the introduction. This rule is to be observed even when the social rank of the gentleman is higher than that of the lady. Where the sexes are the same, always present the inferior to the superior. Never present a gentleman to a lady without first asking her permission to do so. When introduced, persons limit their recognition of each other to a bow. On the continent, and they mean the continent of Europe, ladies never shake hands with gentlemen unless under circumstances of great intimacy." Now, in the 21st century, introductions can still play an important role, especially in a business or professional situation. Many large corporations hire consultants to give etiquette classes, and these include how to make introductions. Today's requirements are a great deal simpler. For example, first, you state the name of the person being introduced to. Second, say, "I would like to introduce," and then the person being met. Third, state the name of the person being introduced. And finally, offer some details to start a conversation. There may also be times when it is necessary to introduce yourself to a business acquaintance or in a group meeting. To make it easy to remember, here is an example from a modern movie. A greeting. Hello. Your name. My name is Inigo Montoya. Your reason for meeting. You killed my father. Your expected outcome. Prepare to die. We're just having a little fun there. Hopefully you've all seen The Princess Bride. To the Bacchus family, one of the most important tasks for Mrs. Bacchus was to ensure that her daughters were married into good families. Courtship in her life was much different from what we look at as dating today. The time for a young woman to enter society and assume her role as a marriageable woman was determined by her parents. A woman was also expected to have completed her education, typically around age 16, and courting before this age was highly frowned upon. A young lady was chaperoned at public entertainments, such as theater or dances, by her parents, brothers, or a family friend. Once she became formally engaged, her fiancé became her, quote, "legitimate protector and companion," end quote. She always followed acceptable behaviors, and books were written that outlined what that would be. Mrs. John Farrer wrote The Young Lady's Friend, that was published in 1837. She called for, quote, "delicacy and refinement," end quote, when in the company of young men. Quote, "never let a man hold your hand. Decline his offer of assistance with getting in and out of carriages," end quote. Mrs. Farrer summarized, quote, "your whole deportment should give the idea that your person, your voice, and your mind are entirely under your own control. Self-possession is the first requisite to good manners," end quote. A gentleman did not consider courting a woman unless he had been formally introduced to her. Men were not without their etiquette manuals. Lord Chesterfield's Advice to His Son on Men and Manners, first published in 1774, was a popular source. As they became acquainted, and if he perceived that she was not averse, a gentleman took the next step, writing to the lady's father to ask permission to pay a visit to their home. As soon as the father established that a young gentleman was suitable company for his daughter, courtship commenced. In the young lady's front parlor, with a chaperone present, a courting couple engaged in allowed activities, including singing, talking, piano playing, and parlor games with other guests. Supervised carriage rides and outdoor excursions to dances, picnics, dinners, and concerts were also permitted. By the mid-19th century, most young people, and many parents, believed that people should marry for love, but permission from parents was still important. Long engagements were common, and it was not considered proper for a young couple to marry until the man could support his wife in a decent home. As young ladies looking to marry, and young men looking for a wife, the young people in the Backus family took advantage of a variety of social situations. A dance was one of the most available means to mingle with others of their age. As with most activities, there were rules governing behavior at these dances. The rules covered when to dance, who to dance with, and even how loud to speak. Here's a few of those rules. Be very careful how you refuse to dance with a gentleman. Be careful that you do not engage yourself twice for the same quadrille, and a quadrille is a type of dance. Let your manner in a ballroom be quiet. It looks very badly to see a lady endeavoring to attract attention by her boisterous manner, loud talking, or overactive dancing. At the end of each dance, your partner will offer his arm and conduct you to a seat, then bow, and release him from further attendance. When invited to dance, hand your ball card to the gentleman, who will put his name in one of the vacant spaces. If you are accompanied by a gentleman, beside your father or brother, remember he has the right to the first dance and will expect to take you in to supper. Never leave the ballroom for any such purpose alone, as there are always gentlemen near and around the door, and it looks very badly to see a lady, unattended, going through a crowd of gentlemen. It is best at a ball to dance only every other dance, as over fatigue and probably a flushed face will follow too much dancing. Never allow your partner, though he may be your most intimate friend, to converse in a low tone or in any way assume a confidential air at a ball. No young lady should go to a ball without the protection of a married lady or an elderly gentleman. These are from the Ladies' Book of Etiquette and Manual of Politeness, a complete handbook for the use of the lady in polite society, by Florence Hartley, published in 1854. Thank you so much for listening to the end of our podcast. We hope this topic intrigued you and added a bit more information into how people were supposed to act. So now that you've listened, are there any rules that you would adhere to, think we should bring back, or are there some that you absolutely think are ridiculous? Please leave your thoughts in the comment section of all our social media. Please share the podcast with your friends and follow us on all social media platforms at Backus Page House. The Backus Page House Museum and Turconnell Heritage Society acknowledges the land we are on today as the traditional territory of First Nations people. As settlers at a settler-focused museum, we value both the significant historical and contemporary contributions of all original peoples and ask how we can be supportive in Indigenous cultural renewal. Life in the Talbot Settlement is a production of Turconnell Heritage Society, operators of Backus Page House Museum. Your host has been Angela Bobier, music provided by Jack Whitmer, and thanks to our producer, Caitlin Rietzma. To make a charitable donation, become a Turconnell Heritage Society member, and to contact the Backus Page House Museum, please visit our website, www.backuspagehouse.ca. Thank you again for listening.